British Sky Broadcasting presents Crash, starring Sandra Bullock as Jean, Don Cheadle as Graham, Matt Dillon as Officer Ryan, Brendan Fraser as Rick, Tandy Newton as Christine, and Ryan Philippe as Officer Hanson. The film's written and directed by Paul Haggis. It's voiced by Stephen O'Neill on behalf of MCS Agency. Sleet is falling gently on a deserted road. Then, several car headlights head slowly past. They blur into little circles of light, forming moving columns of abstract colour, arranged in different patterns. Nighttime. An African-American man with a haunted look is sitting next to an attractive Hispanic woman.
It's the sense of touch.
What?
Any real city, you walk, you know? You brush past people, people bump into you. In L.A., nobody touches you. We're always behind this metal and glass. I think we miss that touch so much that we crash into each other just so we can feel something.
A cop bends down to them.
You guys okay?
I think he hit his head.
You don't think that's true?
Stay in your car.
Graham, I think we got rear-ended. I think we spun around twice. And somewhere in there, one of us lost our frame of reference. And I'm gonna go look for it.
The woman gets out of the car.
Calm down, ma'am.
I am calm.
I need to see your registration and insurance.
Why? Not my fault. It's her fault. She do this.
My fault.
Ma'am, you really need to wait in your vehicle.
My fault? Stop in middle of street. Mexicans don't know how to drive. She blake too fast.
I blake too fast. I'm sorry. You know, see my blake lights.
Ma'am.
See, I stop when I see a long line of cars stopped in front of me. Maybe you see over steering wheel. You blake too.
Ma'am.
Mexican, I call immigration on you. Look what you do my car.
Officer, can you please write down your report how shocked I am to be hit by an Asian driver?
Ma'am.
Ma'am, no. See, it's detective. Detective.
I'm not carrying your
okay.
car. Want to see your
insurance?
Okay, stupid weapon.
All right.
Make my car. You fuck you too.
The dark-skinned man has got out of the car, too.
Hey, detective. Nice entrance.
Fuck you.
He crosses towards grassy scrubland at the side of the road.
Hey. You okay?
Freezing.
Shit. Heard it might snow.
Get out of here.
That's what I heard.
You gotta smoke.
No, I quit.
Yeah, me too. What you got?
That kid.
The African-American detective wears a dark brown suit, a gold tie, and a brown scarf. He has short black hair and a sympathetic, if world-weary, expression.
Hey, Bob.
He strolls glumly up to the grass, looking down at material evidence already marked with small numbered signs. A single trainer lies in the dirt. He crouches down and prods at it with the end of his pen, while he takes a drag on his cigarette. He rubs his eye as he looks up thoughtfully and exhales. He's now staring ahead, and his expression changes to one of concern. Yesterday, daytime, a small gun is placed on a glass counter. A Persian-looking man is in a shop with a young, dark-haired woman in front of a portly white man.
You get one free box of ammunition. What kind do you want?
What did he say? Ammunition? He said, what kind of bullets? The kind that fit. There's more than one kind. I don't know anything about guns. Another good reason not to buy one. Don't start with me again.
Yo, Osama! Plan the jihad on your own time. What do you want?
Are you making insult at me?
Am I making insult at you? Is that the closest you can come to English?
Yes, I speak English. Okay. I am an American citizen.
Oh, God, here we go.
I have right, like you, I have right to buy guns.
Not in my store, you know. Andy, get him out of here now.
Dad, go wait in the car.
Now, get out.
Matt, keep your shoe. You're an ignorant man.
Oh, yeah, I'm ignorant. You're liberating my country, and I'm flying 747s into your mud huts and incinerating your friends. Get the fuck out of my
store. No, you get the fuck.
Come on.
Get
out.
No, don't touch me. He cheated me, this man.
Andy, now.
Let's go.
Ebenezer, okay.
The dark-haired woman turns to the shopkeeper.
You can give me the gun or give me back the money, and I'm really hoping for the money.
With a defiant expression, the man slides forward the gun.
What kind of ammunition do you want?
Whatever fits.
Oh, we got a lot of kinds. We got long Colts, short Colts, ball heads, flat nose, hollow points, wide cutters, and a dozen more that'll fit any size hole. It just depends upon how much bang you can handle.
I'll take the ones in the red box.
The man turns with an inquisitive look.
You know what those are?
Can I have them?
He deposits the red box of bullets on top of a soft case that's enclosing the gun. The woman takes them and marches out of the shop. Two young black men leave a restaurant.
Did you see any white people in there waiting an hour and 32 minutes for a plate of spaghetti? Huh? And how many cups of coffee did we get?
You don't drink coffee, and I didn't want any.
Man, that woman in there poured cup after cup to every single white person around us. But did she even ask you if you wanted any?
We didn't get any coffee that you didn't want and I didn't order. And that's evidence of racial discrimination. Did you notice that our waitress was black?
And black women don't think in stereotypes? You tell me something, man. When was the last time you met one who didn't think she knew everything about your little lazy ass before you even opened your mouth? Huh? That waitress sized us up in 2 seconds. We're black and black people don't tip. So she wasn't gonna waste her time? Now, somebody like that, nothing you could do to change their mind.
So, how much is you need?
You expect me to pay for that kind of service? What? What the fuck is you laughing at, man?
I'm seriously starting to think that you're jealous of Karen.
Hardly. I'd just like to see you get through a meal without calling her or anyone else for that matter.
Okay, look, no more phone calls tonight. All right? As a matter of fact, here, you can hold the battery. Okay?
The posh woman cuddles up to her suited husband.
$10 says she calls in the car.
Wait. You see what that woman just did? You see that?
What? She's cold.
She got colder as soon as she saw us, though.
Aw, man, come on. I'll stop.
Man, look around you, man. You couldn't find a whiter, safer, or better lit part of this city right now. But yet this white woman sees two black guys who look like UCLA students strolling down the sidewalk, and her reaction is blind fear? I mean, look at us, dog. Are we dressed like gangbangers? Huh? No. Do we look threatening? No. Fact, if anybody should be scared around here, it's us. We're the only two black faces surrounded by a sea of over-caffeinated white people patrolled by the trigger-happy LAPD. So you tell me, why aren't we scared?
Because we got guns?
You could be right.
The rich couple are sitting in a black 4x4.
Get the fuck out of the car! What?
Give me the keys!
Come on, okay, hurry
okay,
up!
Okay.
Get down!
No, please!
Don't look at me! Motherfucker, I said don't look at me! Turn around! Come on, go!
One of the carjackers puts a little statuette on the dashboard.
No. Take that voodoo-ass thing off of there right now.
I know you just didn't call St. Christopher voodoo. Man's the patron saint of travelers, dog.
You had a conversation with God, huh? What did God say? Go forth, my son, and leave big slobbery suction rings on every dashboard you find? Why the hell do you do that?
Look at the way your crazy ass drive, then ask me that again.
The vehicle speeds past a late-night liquor store, in front of which a policeman and a dead body.
Chevy pickup and Mercedes driving north on Balboa. Pickup cuts in front, driver of the Mercedes gets pissed, pulls a gun, doesn't realize the guy in the pickup is a cop coming off shift.
Wait a minute, this Barry Gibb dude is a cop?
Yeah, name's Conklin. He's a narc out of Wilshire. I got the Mercedes. Mercedes takes a shot at him, Detective Conklin returns fire, one shot, Mercedes rolls to a stop, driver opens the door, falls out dead.
He looks very relaxed for just having shot somebody.
He says he kept trying to drive away. Mercedes kept pulling up next to him, screaming, waving a gun, shot back in self-defense.
Anybody actually see who shot first?
They just heard two bangs.
Find me a witness.
The detective, hands in pockets, walks away from the pickup and towards the Mercedes, which his partner is examining the passenger seat of. The man opens the driver door. A handgun is on the floor.
That is a nice gun.
Well, the car is registered to a Cindy Bradley. That's not Cindy. That is a William Lewis. Pounds under the front seat. Hollywood Division.
The woman hands the detective a wallet, showing a police badge.
Looks like Detective Conklin shot himself the wrong nigga.
He looks at the long-haired and bearded Conklin, who folds his arms. Later, the well-groomed woman comes down some stairs. A shaven-headed Mexican-looking man is working on a door lock nearby.
How much longer are you going to be?
This is the last one.
Thank you.
The woman strides away. She has long, medium brown hair tinged with highlights. She has a pretty elfin face, but a stern expression.
But you don't think reporters listen to police calls?
I need to talk to you for a second.
Can you just give me a minute, right? Find Flanagan, will you? Now.
Yes, sir.
They meet in the hallway.
Yes, hi.
I want the locks changed again in the morning.
You want? Look, why don't you just go lie down, huh? Have you checked on James?
Well, of course I've checked on James. I've checked on him every 5 minutes since we've been home. Do not patronize me. I want the locks changed again in the morning.
Shh, it's okay. Just go to bed, all right?
Do you know what? Didn't I just ask you not to treat me like a child?
I'm sorry, Miss Jean. It's okay, I go home now.
It's fine. Thank you very much for staying, Maria.
You're welcome, no problem. Good night, Miss Jean.
Good night.
We'll see you tomorrow.
I would like the locks changed again in the morning. And you know what? You might mention that we'd appreciate it if next time they didn't send a gang member.
A gang member?
Yes, yes.
What, you mean that kid in there?
Yes, the guy in there with the shaved head, the pants around his ass, the prison tattoo.
Those are not prison tattoos.
Oh, really? And he's not going to go sell our key to one of his gangbanger friends the moment he is out our door.
We've had a really tough night. I think it'd be best if you just went upstairs right
now.
And
what, wait for them to break in? I just had a gun pointed in my face.
You lower your voice.
And it was my fault because I knew it was going to happen. But if a white person sees two black men walking towards her and she turns and walks in the other direction, she's a racist, right? Well, I got scared and I didn't say anything. And 10 seconds later, I had a gun in my face. Now, I am telling you, your amigo in there is going to sell our key to one of his homies. And this time it'd be really fucking great if you acted like you actually gave a shit.
The man with thick-set yet handsome features stands motionless, hands on hips. Jean, his wife, is in the kitchen standing over the sink. She looks round. The locksmith glances at her with a resentful look and shuts his toolbox. He gets up. She looks away. He places two sets of keys on the counter next to her and walks away. She stares down at them for a moment thoughtfully.
All right, what do we got? Talk to me, Karen.
Flanagan doesn't think anybody has a story yet.
I'm the goddamn district attorney of Los Angeles. If my car gets jacked, it's gonna make news. Fuck! Why do these guys have to be black? I mean, why? No matter how we spin this thing, I'm either gonna lose the black vote or I'm gonna lose a law and order vote.
I think you're worrying too much. You have a lot of support in the black community.
All right, if we can't duck this thing, we're gonna have to neutralize it. What we need is a picture of me pinning a medal on a black man. Bruce? The firefighter. The one who saved the camp or something. Northridge. What's his name?
He's Iraqi.
He's Iraqi. Well, he looks black.
He's dark-skinned, sir, but he's Iraqi. His name's Saddam Kahum.
Saddam. His name's Saddam. Oh, that's real good, Bruce. Yeah, I'm gonna pin a medal on an Iraqi named Saddam. Give yourself a raise, will ya?
Meanwhile, in a modest diner...
It's been good doing business with you.
How soon can I have them?
I'm picking them up right now.
Look, you're not listening to me. This is an emergency. I keep telling you he's in pain. He can't sleep.
Mr. Ryan, your father has been to the clinic 3 times in the last month. He is being treated for urinary tract infection. That is by no means an emergency. Now, if you have any more questions about your HMO plan, why don't you make an appointment to come in between 10 and 4, Monday through Friday?
Right, what does my father do about sleeping tonight?
I don't know. I'm not a doctor.
I want to talk to your supervisor.
I am my supervisor.
Yeah, what is your name?
Shaniqua Johnson.
Shaniqua, big fucking surprise that is.
Oh.
She hangs up. He hangs up too. He's a youngish white man with short dark hair, and he's dressed in the black uniform of an LA policeman. He heads out of the diner. A Chinese-looking man drives past in an old transit van. The cop gets into his patrol car.
1005,
described as the Black Lake Model Lincoln Navigator, California plate 4, Peter Charles Ida, 315. Suspects are two black males, approximately 20 years of age.
The vehicle heads out onto the street past the neon signs of the shops. His partner beside him is a younger man with an earnest appearance.
That's not it. That's not the vehicle, John. The plates don't match. The driver's gotta be 40, and nobody jacks a car and takes it to Studio City.
The policeman shines a light into the car in front of them. A young woman emerges from the lap of the driver's seat.
They were doing something.
The smart black 4x4 pulls over to the side of the road. The patrol car rolls slowly up behind them. The younger cop looks round thoughtfully at his partner. John Ryan, the older cop, gets out of the car. With one hand tucked into his utility belt and the other holding up a torch, John approaches the executive 4x4. He taps his torch on the driver's window.
Enthusiastic. Keep your hands where I can see them, please. I'm gonna need to see your driver's license and registration.
No problem. I'm gonna have to reach inside of the glove compartment to get the registration. Is that okay?
Nice and slow, please.
Okay. The smart young African-American man wears a roll neck and a dark jacket.
How are you tonight, officer?
Excellent.
Here you go.
The man passes his document to the policeman.
Stay inside the vehicle, please.
The man and the woman giggle at each other. Tommy, the younger cop, is standing behind the vehicle. John gives him the driving license and he moves towards the patrol car.
Let's do it again right now. Step out of the car, please, sir.
Wait a minute, officer. I haven't been drinking or anything.
We shouldn't have a problem.
He doesn't drink. He's a Buddhist, for Christ's sake.
No, it's okay. It's fine.
Step onto the sidewalk, sir. That's good, right there.
John moves around to face the man.
Look at me. I want you to stand on your right foot, touch your nose with the index finger of your left hand.
The man mirrors the cop, putting his finger on his nose. Tommy watches from the patrol car.
I told you he doesn't drink.
Ma'am, I'm only going to tell you one time to stay in the vehicle.
Ma'am.
Honey, I'm okay. I got this.
Don't you ma'am me. Who the hell do you think you're talking to?
Look, officer, my wife has had a couple drinks.
All right, both of you, turn around, put your hands on top of your head and interlock your fingers.
No, wait a minute. We're only a block
hands
away from our house.
Hands on your head and interlock your fingers.
That's
hands
not even
on your
necessary.
Head interlock your fingers.
Look,
here
I'm a
go.
Television director. Me and my wife are just coming home from an award show.
Calm down.
There's nothing wrong.
Put your hands on top of your head, ma'am.
Will you just do what he says?
Fuck you.
Put your hands on top of your head, ma'am.
You keep your filthy fucking hands off me. Fucking pig.
Just stop talking.
That's quite a mouth you have. Of course you know that.
Fuck you. That's what this is all about, isn't it? You thought you saw a white woman blowing a black man that just drove you little cracker ass crazy.
Will you just shut your fucking mouth?
I listen to your husband, ma'am. Your leg is open.
John feels the young woman.
Now, do you have any guns or knives or anything I might get stuck with?
I'm wearing a cocktail dress. What do you think?
I'd be surprised some of the places I found weapons.
He's clean.
What do you think we should do about this, Mr. Thayer?
He feels her bottom.
My partner and I just witnessed your wife performing fellatio on you while you were operating a motor vehicle. That's reckless endangerment, which, incidentally, is a felony. And we can charge your wife here with lewd conduct and performing a sexual act in public. And you say you're a block from home. Now, we could use our discretion and let you go with a warning, or we can cuff you and put you in the back of the car.
He now has his fingers up her skirt.
What do you think we should do, sir?
Look, we're sorry, and we would appreciate if you'd just let us go with a warning, please.
The woman shakes her head gently.
Man's apologizing, Tommy. I think we can let him go. Don't you?
Tommy stares at his partner.
Yeah.
All right.
can go.
Mr. Thayer has tears in his eyes. He watches the policeman move away. John turns round to the couple.
You folks drive safe now, huh?
Gently sobbing in her ivory cocktail dress, Mrs. Thayer gets shakily back into the vehicle. She stares out of the window down at the pavement. Mr. Thayer gets in next to her. He tries to reassuringly touch her shoulder. She flinches and turns away. He stares forwards thoughtfully. He blinks slowly, and the 4x4 drives off. Tommy is standing staring into the distance.
Let's go, Tommy.
Then, an older woman in a headscarf is trying to shut an old door.
It won't close.
More can make it, Shish. I can do that.
Dad, you couldn't even get it open.
Have respect to your father. Give me the gun.
Here. Now you can shoot anybody you want.
Dory, that man could have killed your mother. You think I should let crazy people do what they want to us?
Ferhat, it won't close.
Boshe, oh, madam.
The Persian man puts the gun in a drawer.
Dory Jun, you should be at work.
Chere, boy, sadi bor sarkar dige.
Later in the bedroom of an executive apartment, Mrs. Thayer picks up the phone.
Who are you calling?
I'm gonna report their asses, sons of bitches.
You actually believe they're gonna take anything you have to say seriously?
Do you have any idea how that felt? To have that pig's hands all over me? And you just stood there.
She puts the phone down.
And then you apologized to him?
I mean, what did you want me to do? Get us both shot?
They were going to shoot us on Ventura Boulevard. Pathetic.
Yeah, well, maybe you would have been satisfied with just being arrested.
Oh, I get it. Much better than letting him shove his hand up my crotch than get your name in the paper.
You know, you finally got me figured out, because, see, that's exactly what I was worried about right there.
I wasn't. You weren't afraid that all your good friends at the studio were going to read about you in the morning and realize that, you know what, he's actually black.
You need to calm down right now.
No, what I need is a husband who will not just stand there while I am being molested.
I mean, they were cops, for God's sakes. They had guns. You know what? Maybe I should have let them arrest your ass. I mean, sooner or later, you gotta find out what it is really like to be black.
Fuck you, man. Like, you know. Closest you ever came to being black, Cameron, was watching The Cosby Show.
Yeah, well, at least I wasn't watching it with the rest of the equestrian team.
Yeah, you're right, Cameron. I got a lot to learn, because I haven't quite learned how to shuck and jive. Let me hear it again. Thank you, Mr. Policeman. You sure is mighty kind to us poor black folk. You be sure to let me know next time you want to finger fuck my wife.
She shoves him.
How the fuck do you say something like that to me? Oh, fuck you.
He walks away.
That's good. A little anger. It's a bit late, but it's nice to see.
Then a white transit-style van pulls slowly into the driveway of a wood-fronted house. The shaven-headed young locksmith comes in through the front door. He puts down his toolbox and carefully takes off his boots at the door. He looks down the dark hallway. Then he pushes open the door of a child's bedroom. He stops in the doorway. The small bed is empty. A little floor lamp is on, giving the room a soft glow. The man walks over to the white wooden bed and crouches down to peer under it. A young dark-haired girl is lying there.
How's it going?
Okay.
Yeah. You didn't get scared or something, did you? There's no monsters in the closet, right? Because I hate monsters.
There's no such thing as monsters.
Oh, that's a good thing.
I heard a bang.
Like a truck bang?
Like a gun.
The man puts a teddy bear on the floor and rests his head on it.
That's funny, because we moved out of that bad neighborhood. And there's not too many guns around here.
How far can bullets go?
They go pretty far, but they usually get stuck in something and stop.
What if they don't?
You thinking about that bullet that came through your window?
The little girl shrugs.
You think we should move again?
I like it here.
Me too, but if that bullet found out where we lived... Oh, hola.
What?
I'm so stupid. How can I forget
this? What?
Nah, forget it. You ain't gonna believe me.
Tell me.
Okay. When I was 5, this fairy came into my room one night.
Right.
See, I told you you weren't gonna believe me. Okay, go to sleep now, you little
Don't
rat.
Don't tell me.
Okay. So this fairy comes into my room, and I'm like, yeah, right, you're a fairy. Anyway, we're talking, you know, and she's flying all around the room, knocking down all my posters and stuff.
She was flying?
Yeah, but she had these little stubby wings. I mean, she could have glued them on, you know? Like, I'm gonna believe she's a fairy. So she said, I'll prove it. So she reaches into her backpack, and she pulls out this invisible cloak. She ties it around my neck, and she tells me that it's impenetrable. You know what impenetrable means? It means that nothing can go through it. No bullets, nothing. She told me that if I wore it, nothing would hurt me. So I did. And my whole life, I never got shot, stabbed, nothing. I mean, how weird is that? And when she told me that I was supposed to give it to my daughter on her 5th birthday, and I forgot.
Can I touch it?
Sure, go ahead.
She touches his sleeve.
I don't feel it.
Yeah, it's pretty cool, huh? If you want, I can take it off and tie it around your shoulder. She told me how to do it. Unless you think it's stupid, then...
Don't you need it?
No, not anymore. So what do you think, you want it?
The little girl smiles and nods her head. The man reaches towards her.
Okay, let's get out of here.
He pulls her gently out from her hiding place and sits her up on her bed. The man starts to mime, carefully untying the invisible cloak from around his neck. The little girl watches entranced. The man lifts the make-believe cape off his shoulders. He lifts her dark hair up as he places it around her. He mimes a tying movement around her neck.
Okay, is that too tight? Do you feel anything at all? Good. Then it's just right.
He kisses her on the forehead. And the girl lies down, rubbing her eye. The man tucks her in.
Do I take it off when I have a bath?
No, you leave it on all the time. Till you have a daughter, and she turns 5. Then you give it to her. Okay.
He leans forward and kisses her forehead.
Okay. Good night, sweetie.
He stands in the doorway and watches as the little girl is stroking the invisible cape around her shoulder. The man smiles and knocks off the light. He shuts the door. He lifts his pager and leans his head against the door. The lights of his van come on, the vehicle reverses and heads out along the deserted street. Meanwhile, the two carjackers are still driving round in the smart black 4x4.
Nah, you wanna listen to music out of the oppressor, you go right ahead, man.
What kind of lunacy of your mind is hip-hop music of the oppressor?
Listen to it, man. Nigga this, nigga that. You think white people go around calling each other honkies all day, man? Hey, honky, how's business? Going great, cracker, we're diversifying.
How about this, huh? How about that? Listen to that, you like that? Man singing about lynching niggas.
And you think there's a difference, don't you? Huh?
Gonna buy me a rope and lynch me a nigga.
You have absolutely no idea where hip-hop music comes from, dude.
I shoot them dead first, but I done broke my trigger.
You see, back in the 60s, we had smart, articulate
Gonna
black
get
men.
Get out my sheep, put my hood on my head.
Like Huey Newton, Bobby Seale, Eldridge Cleaver, Fred
Gonna
Hampton.
String them up
These
good.
Brothers were speaking out and people were listening.
And then they'll be dead.
And then the FBI said, oh, no, we can't
home
have that.
Home of the brave in a land of the free.
I know. Let's give the niggas this music by a bunch of mumbling idiots. And sooner or later, they'll all copy it and nobody will be able to understand a fucking word they say. End of problem.
They stop the car along a dark side street and look round with concerned expressions.
What the fuck was that, huh?
A set of keys swing in the door of a white van. The two young men get out of their executive car. Peter, wearing a denim jacket, peers under the vehicle.
Holy shit!
What?
Man, we done ran over a Chinaman.
You're saying there's a Chinaman under this truck?
What part don't you understand? There's a Chinaman stuck underneath the fucking truck.
The other man has a look.
Help me.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. Oh, God. What the hell did he do? Just leap out in front of the truck?
Man, this is so completely fucked up.
Oh, really? No shit.
Okay, hold up. Get back in the truck.
What?
Yes, get back in the
truck.
You
think we didn't drag him far enough?
No, we gonna drive away. And he gonna let go.
He's not gonna let go, Anthony. You know why? Because he's stuck underneath the fucking truck. Now, if he could have let go, he probably would have considered that option about a half a block back. Now, what you and I gotta do, just grab his arms and pull him from underneath.
You grab his arm, it's gonna fall off. Then you're gonna be standing in the middle of the street holding a Chinaman's arm. Then what your ass gonna do, huh?
If we leave this man here, he dies. Then we're up for murder charges. And just grab his arm, and let's just pull him out.
Anthony, in a gold casual jacket, shakes his head and bends down. Then at the police station...
I don't want to cause any problems, Lieutenant. I just want a new partner.
Oh, I understand. Your partner's a racist prick, but you don't want to stir up any bad feelings with him.
Well, he's been on the force for a long time. And
17 years.
And I do have to work here, sir.
So, you don't mind that there's a racist prick on the force. You just don't want him to ride in your car.
His boss is a black man.
If you need me to go on record about this, sir, I will.
That'd be great. Write a full report. Because I'm anxious to understand how an obvious bigot could have gone undetected in this department for 17 years. 11 of which he was under my personal supervision. Which doesn't speak very highly of my managerial skills. But that's not your concern. I can't wait to read it.
What if I said I wanted a new partner for personal reasons?
So now you're saying he's not a racist prick, you just don't like him.
Tommy thinks.
Yes, sir.
That's not a good enough reason.
Well, then I guess I should think of a better one and get back to you.
So you think I'm asking you to make one up?
No, sir. I just can't think of one right now.
You want to know what I heard?
They leave the office.
I heard it was a case of uncontrollable flatulence.
You want me to say he has flatulence?
Not him, you. You have uncontrollable flatulence, and you're too embarrassed to ride with anybody else, so you're requesting a one-man car.
I'm not comfortable with that, Lieutenant.
Well, I wouldn't be either. Which is why I understand your need for privacy. Well, just like I'm sure you understand how hard a black man has to work to get to, say, where I am, in a racist fucking organization like the LAPD. And how easily that can be taken away. Now, that being said, it's your decision. You can put your career and mine on the line in pursuit of a just cause. Or you can admit to having a embarrassing problem of a personal nature.
The police lieutenant puts on his cap and walks away.
Fuck.
Then, the illuminated emergency sign at the doors of the city hospital. The bruised head of the Chinaman slumps against the pavement outside it. The black 4x4 speeds off past a little advent scene. Meanwhile, the locksmith is working on the lock of a door in the Persian man's shop. The shop owner is napping in a chair. The locksmith approaches him.
Excuse me. Excuse me, sir.
You finish?
I replaced the lock. But you got a real problem with that door.
You fixed the lock?
No, I replaced the lock. But you gotta fix that door.
Just fix the lock.
So, listen to me. What you need is a new door.
I need new door?
Yeah.
Okay. How much?
I don't... Sir, you're gonna have to call somebody that sells doors.
You tried to cheat me, right? Huh? You have a friend that fixed door?
Nah, I don't have a friend that fixed doors, bro.
Then go and fix the fucking lock, you cheater.
You know what? Why don't you just pay for lock and I won't charge you for the time?
You don't fix the lock. I pay? What, you think I'm stupid? You fix the fucking lock. You cheater.
Hey, I'd appreciate if you stop calling me names.
Then fix the fucking lock.
I replaced the lock. You gotta fix the fucking door.
You cheat. You fucking cheater.
Fine. Don't pay.
What?
Have a good night.
What? No. Wait. You come back here. You fix the lock. Come here. You fix my lock. Fix the fucking lock!
The two carjackers are in a large neon-lit garage talking to a gruff bearded man.
No, I understand. You run over a Chinaman. Stuff him in the back, then bring the truck here so I can share in the experience.
Come on, man. It's a little bit of blood. It'll wash right off.
Georgie, burn this thing.
Burn it. It's a brand new Navigator. All you need is a little piece of carpet.
You watch the Discovery Channel?
Not a lot.
We got some good shit on that channel.
Every night there's a show with somebody, shining a little blue light and finding tiny specks of blood spattered on carpets and walls and ceiling fans, bathroom fixtures, and special edition plastic Burger King drink cups. And the next thing they show is some stupid redneck in handcuffs who looks absolutely stunned that this is happening to him. Sometimes the redneck is actually watching a Discovery Channel when they break in to arrest him, and he still can't figure out how on earth they could have caught him.
He leans into the window of a blue car and gestures at the pair. With confused looks, Anthony and Peter bend down.
Do I look like I want to be on a Discovery Channel?
No.
Then get the fuck out of my shop.
Peter retrieves his St. Christopher statuette from the dashboard.
Oh, yeah. Make sure you get that. Without him, things could have gone really fucking wrong tonight.
Oh, God.
This could be a psychic.
Don't you dare. Don't.
Graham Waters. No, he's not here, Mom. I'm not gonna go looking for him. Look, he'll be home when you... Just leave it alone, Mom. Mom, I can't talk to you right now, okay? I'm having sex with a white woman.
They're naked on a bed.
Okay, where were we?
I was white, and you were about to jerk off in the shower.
Oh, shit.
She pushes Graham off the bed and gets up.
Come on. I would have said you were Mexican, but I don't think it would have pissed her off as much.
She puts on a vest.
Why do you keep everybody a certain distance, huh? What, you start to feel something in panic?
Come on, Rhea. You're just pissed because I answered the phone.
That's just where I begin to get pissed. I mean, really, what kind of man speaks to his mother that way, huh?
Oh, this is about my mother. What do you know about my mother?
I know if I was your father, I'd kick your fucking ass.
Okay, I was raised badly. Why don't you take your clothes off, get back in the bed, and teach me a lesson?
You want a lesson? I'll give you a lesson. How about a geography lesson? My father's from Puerto Rico. My mother's from El Salvador. Neither one of those is Mexico.
Well then I guess the big mystery is, who gathered all those remarkably different cultures together and taught them all how to park their cars on their lawns?
With a look of incredulity, Rhea turns and leaves. Graham takes a drag on his cigarette. Meanwhile, John Ryan, in a dark bedroom, is awoken by a noise. He gets out of bed and walks down a dark corridor. An old man is sitting in the bathroom. John stands in the doorway.
Hey, Pop, you okay?
If I could piss, I'd be okay. Jesus, I'm done now. Give me a hand.
John reaches in and supports his father, who tries to stand.
Wait a goddamn minute.
The old man's legs buckle under him. They shuffle out into the corridor.
Wait. Stop. I gotta go back.
Okay.
The man sits down on the toilet again. John remains in the doorway. The man looks up at him.
What, are you gonna stand there and stare at me?
John slowly closes the bathroom door. He walks along the corridor and leans in the doorway of another room. With a look of concern, he thinks to himself and sighs. It's very early morning. The street lights are still on along a suburban LA street. Later, the Persian man cautiously opens the back door of his shop, which the locksmith had been working on. It's been forced open. He steps inside. He walks over bits of broken glass. Cans and bottles are lying on the floor too. He moves out of the back room and into the shop. He looks round in disbelief. It's been completely ransacked. Then District Attorney Richard Cabot is coming out of his office.
So Conklin just shot him.
Mm-hmm.
They know each other?
Sir.
It's a grudge thing?
As far as we can tell.
Karen, his black assistant, beside him.
You think this is racially motivated?
Well,
A dozen people heard the shots. Nobody saw anything.
What do we have on it?
Graham Waters.
Waters. All right, well, tell them they speak to no one but me.
Call a press conference for 4 o'clock, and I want Waters here at 3:30. And will someone please find Flanagan?
No. What up, Mo' Fat?
Man robs purses from old ladies, and you all, hey, how's it going, Mo' Fat? That nigga would steal teeth from a cripple, man.
You calling him a thief? And we do what?
The man steals from black people. Only reason black people steal from their own is because they terrify the white people.
Oh, man, please.
Think about it. Sherman Oaks, Burbank, Santa Monica. All scary-ass places for a brother to find himself. Now drop Mo' Fat off at a Starbucks in Toluca Lake, that nigga will run like a rabbit. Soon as somebody say decaf latte. What the fuck did you do to my car?
Meanwhile, Jean, the DA's wife, opens up the front of her dishwasher. Maria, her maid, comes through the French windows.
Sorry I take your car, Miss Jean. I turned keys to my car, but nothing. James wanted to take this to school, but I don't want the kids to fight over it.
Are these clean or dirty?
All clean, Senora.
You know, Maria, just once I would like to wake up and find these dishes in the cabinet. Okay?
Si, Senora. No problem.
I'm starting to understand now. By your work, you're setting an example for our neighborhood. Sort of like a big brother kind of thing, right?
Yeah, you laugh, man. But you have never seen me steal from a black person ever in your life.
Peter sticks up his hand at the edge of the street.
What the hell do you think you're doing right now, man?
Waving down the bus.
Man, put your hand down, dog. Are you out of your mind? You actually expect me to get on a bus?
No, I was hoping we could push your car across town. You know why? Because we just don't do stuff like that no more.
You have no idea, do you? You have no idea why they put them great big windows on the sides of buses, do you?
Why?
One reason only. To humiliate the people of color who are reduced to riding on it.
I don't know that.
And you know, you can fill the Staples Center with what you don't know.
Oh, you know, the Kings are playing tonight.
You don't like hockey. The only reason you say you do is to piss me off.
Love hockey.
Cut. Prep. Moving on.
Okay, that takes us into scene 12.
And we are in the bathroom. Jamal. That's what I'm talking about. Right
now. Mr. Thayer is on a TV set.
Okay. Yeah, you got a second?
Yeah, Fred, I just want to grab some coffee.
Yeah, listen, I think we need another take, buddy.
That looked pretty terrific, man.
This is going to sound strange, but is Jamal seeing a speech coach or something?
What do you mean?
Have you noticed, this is weird for a white guy to say, but have you noticed he's talking a lot less black lately?
No, I haven't noticed that.
Really? Like in this scene? He was supposed to say, don't be talking about that. And he changed it to don't talk to me about that.
Wait a minute. You think because of that, the audience won't recognize him as being a black man? Come on.
Is there a problem, Cam?
Excuse me?
Is there a problem, Cam?
Cameron Thayer looks slightly confused at his colleague.
No, we don't have a problem.
I mean, because all I'm saying is it's not his character. Eddie's supposed to be the smart one, not Jamal, right? I mean, you're the expert here. But to me, it rings false.
With a hint of resignation, Cameron nods.
We're gonna do it one more time.
Thanks, buddy.
Everybody back to one, please. Let's do it one more time.
Cameron moves back to the front of the set.
Smart, man.
He heads towards an African-American boy in a striped jumper.
Morning, Carol. Who do I have?
Hold for a minute, please. Mr. Trujillo called and canceled, but you have a walk-in, Mr. Ryan.
A portly black woman looks at John Ryan, who's sitting in the waiting room.
Send him in. Mr. Ryan,
yeah.
My name is Shaniqua Johnson. I believe we spoke last night.
Oh, yeah. I wanted to apologize about that. I haven't been getting too much sleep. My father's in a lot of pain.
Oh, I'm sorry to hear that.
Yeah, this doctor he's been seeing says he's got a urinary tract infection. And he's been taking this medicine for a month now, and he just keeps getting worse.
And he's been back to see Dr. Robinson.
Yeah. Between you and me, the man's an idiot.
Really?
Well, no offense, but the guy sees 100 patients an hour. I think his nurses are doing most of the work.
Mm. If you're unhappy, your father's welcome to see a doctor outside the network.
And if this new doctor says it's not an infection, says it's his prostate and it needs to be operated on, is that going to be covered?
Not unless Dr. Robinson offers.
What good is that going to do?
I'm sorry, there's nothing else I can do.
All right, well, you know what I can't do? I can't look at you without thinking about the 5 or 6 more qualified white men who didn't get your job.
It's time for you to go.
Now, I'm saying this because I'm really hoping that I'm wrong about you. I'm hoping that someone like yourself, someone who may have been given a helping hand, might have a little compassion for someone in a similar situation.
Carol, I need security in my office.
You know, you don't like me. That's fine. I'm a prick. My father doesn't deserve to suffer like this. He was a janitor. He struggled his whole life, saved enough to start his own company. 23 employees, all of them black, paid him equal wages when no one else was doing that. For 30 years, he worked side by side with those men, sweeping and carrying garbage. And then the city council decides to give minority-owned companies preference in city contracts. And overnight, my father loses everything. His business, his home, his wife, everything. But not once does he blame you people. And I'm not asking you to help me. I'm asking that you do this small thing for a man who lost everything so people like yourself could reap the benefits. And do you know what it's going to cost you? Nothing. Just a flick of your pen.
Your father sounds like a good man. And if he'd come in here today, I probably would have approved this request. But he didn't come in. You did. And for his sake, it's a real shame. Get him the hell out of my office.
He storms out of the room. Then a young woman with a punk style appearance is on the phone in another office.
Sir, I spoke to our employee and he told you he needed to replace or repair the door.
He say he fixed the lock. You come here, see how fixed it is. I am not yelling, I'm upset. Yes, I am.
Are you all right?
Shirinju, stop washing. Insurance must take picture, okay? Yes.
Look what they wrote. They think we're Arab.
Please, you come see my store.
When did Persian become Arab?
I want his name. Yes.
Oh my God.
I want his name.
Dad.
Give me his name.
Dad.
I'm not giving you his name, sir.
Dad, sir, take the gun.
Not fix my lock. I want his name.
Baba.
I'm gonna hang up now, sir.
Don't hang up. Shit.
The daughter opens up the drawer. Her father leans on the counter disconsolately. Then in a front room, an upright piano, upon which are old framed family photographs. An ashtray full of cigarette ends lies next to the keyboard. A figure stands by the piano and taps the high keys, then moves over to a table, upon which are some of the apparatus for drug taking. Detective Graham picks up a silver spoon with a bent handle. He looks outside. A woman with curly dark hair is sitting with her back to him. He heads outside and squats down in front of her.
Mom, it's cold. Come on.
With one hand under the lady's shoulder and another on her back, he helps the woman up. He moves the chair out of the way and supports her as they walk back in. He helps her to lie on the sofa. He sits by her. The woman looks sleepily up at him.
Did you find your brother?
No, Ma.
With a thoughtful and somber look, the policeman looks down.
I was doing real good.
Graham holds her hand and watches her. She seems to be sleeping. Then she opens her eyes.
Did you find your brother?
No, Mom.
Tell him to come home. Tell him I'm not mad. Okay, baby.
Okay, Mom.
Okay, baby. Okay. Okay.
Graham thinks to himself. Then he opens up the fridge and looks at the meager provisions in it. A foil-wrapped bit of chicken, an open tin can, a plastic container of milk. He shakes his head. He pulls out the milk, unscrews the top, sniffs it, and recoils. He thinks, shuts the fridge door and chucks the milk in the bin. Then he steps out of the house. He wears a dark grey suit. He puts a cigarette into his mouth and opens his car door. Rhea is waiting in the car for him.
You apologize to your mother?
She wasn't there.
Internal Affairs called. Found something in the Mercedes.
At the TV studio.
That's lunch, 1 hour.
Cameron gets up. A large studio door is slid open. Mrs. Thayer is standing behind it, wearing a fuchsia dress and grey jacket. She waves at him. He looks away thoughtfully. He puts down the clipboard he was holding and moves towards her. They stroll between the studio buildings.
I tried to call. It sounded like you were having a bad day, huh?
Yeah.
She tries to link her arm into his, but he pulls away. She stops.
What? I got scared, Cam. You know, it's not like I haven't been pulled over before, you know? And not like that. And yes, I was a little drunk, and I was mouthing off. I'm sorry.
Her lip quivers as she fights the tears.
When that man was putting his hands on me, I just...
I don't want to talk about
this. I couldn't believe you let him do that, baby. Look, I know what you did was the right thing, okay? But I was humiliated. For you. I just couldn't stand to see that man take away your dignity.
That's what happened.
Oh, baby, don't do this.
No, you're right. I am.
You gonna walk away from me? Cameron!
Just go home.
Her face crumpled with emotion, Mrs. Thayer runs away. A man of oriental appearance stands in the Persian shop as the owner clears up glass from the floor.
Arshan. Thanks.
He puts his mobile in his pocket.
Has your brother read his policy?
He doesn't read English.
Jimmy Gay.
You got a sapkuni?
Miss Guzari, you said that you called the locksmith?
Wolf says a telephone card over there.
Yes, I tell him fix it. They said that their man told you... to fix the door and you didn't do so.
Are you saying it's his fault?
Insurance company's calling it negligence. Not covering any of this.
Negligence? Yeah. No, this store is all we have.
The shopkeeper looks at his pretty dark-haired daughter with disbelief. He turns and moves away, picking up a dustbin. The oriental insurance man looks at the daughter.
Really, I'm sorry.
He picks up his clipboard and leaves the shop. The young woman moves past her mother and into the back room, where her father is methodically taking things off the shelves and putting them in the bin. She leans against the shelving unit.
What time you must go to work?
Not until tonight.
Go home and sleep.
Baba John, you should have about an hour after
that. It's okay. Go home and sleep.
The man walks out of the room. Meanwhile, the LA policemen are heading out of their headquarters and towards their cars. Tommy stands and looks at Officer John Ryan, who is leaning against one of the patrol cars. He marches resolutely towards him. John looks round.
Hey. Maybe they didn't tell you, but I've been reassigned.
Yeah, they told me. I just wanted to say good luck, and it was good riding with you.
You too.
They shake hands, but John keeps hold of Tommy's hand.
Wait till you've been on the job a few more years.
Yeah.
Look at me. Wait till you've been doing it a little longer. You think you know who you are?
He nods. Tommy nods back.
You have no idea.
Tommy withdraws his hand. John pats him on the shoulder and heads off.
Yo, Gomez, you ready to roll, homie?
Ready, amigo.
John turns back to Tommy, who's watching him. The young cop gets into his car and picks up his police radio.
Radio check, 21L23.
21L. The two detectives, Graham and Rhea, enter a police car pound. A grey-haired man leads them towards the back of a silver Mercedes and opens the boot. Wearing latex gloves, the man lifts the carpet up to expose the spare tire. He lifts the tire and pulls open a flap to reveal that the tire is stuffed with bundles of $100 notes. Rhea nods at Graham, who wearily shuts the boot. Meanwhile, filming has taken place in the TV studio. Cameron is watching the action on a monitor. He looks away thoughtfully and takes off his headphones, leaning his chin on his hand. The Persian shopkeeper is sitting outside the back of his shop, slumped in a metal chair. He too is lost in thought. He gets up and carries the plastic dustbin over to a large waste silo. He pulls out the little blue dustbin bag and tosses it into the silo. He turns and, carrying the dustbin, shuffles back inside the building. Suddenly he comes back, opens up the bag and starts to search through its contents. He pulls out a crumpled handwritten receipt and examines it, pointing to a signature at the bottom of it. Then Officer Ryan is in the passenger seat of another patrol car with his new Hispanic partner, Gomez. The car heads round a corner and down a quiet suburban road in the morning sunshine. The car slows at a junction. There is a long line of stationary traffic in the road ahead of them. The car stops and Ryan gets out. On the brow of a hill, at the head of the queue, one car with a crumpled bonnet, another that's flipped onto its roof.
Call it in.
Ryan rushes past the line of motionless cars. He passes a man standing in front of one of the cars involved in the accident with its bonnet up, the smoke pouring out of the car's engine. Ryan runs past him. He looks round as he reaches the car lying on its roof. He crouches down, peers inside, and gets up, pulling at the doors, but they remain steadfast. He crouches down and peers into the smashed-up interior.
Ma'am? Can you hear me?
Paramedics are rolling. They'll be here in 2 minutes.
All right, get an extinguisher and get that fire out.
Jesus.
Gomez sprints away.
Ma'am? Are you hurt? Can you move?
Okay, I'm
gonna get you out.
The woman is suspended upside down by her seatbelt. Ryan glances back at the fire in the other car behind them.
That's okay.
He has crawled into the interior.
Okay, I'm gonna get you out.
The woman slowly looks round. It's Mrs. Thayer.
No.
It's okay.
Lady,
I'm trying to help you.
Fuck you! Not you! Somebody! Anybody else! Please,
stop
somebody! Not you! No! Get your filthy fucking hands off me!
Stop moving!
No!
Lady, I'm not gonna fucking hurt you!
Mrs. Thayer is weeping.
Okay.
Please don't touch me. Don't.
I'm not gonna touch you, okay? But there's nobody else here yet, and that's gasoline there. We need to get you out of here right away. Okay?
Oh my god.
Okay. I need to reach across your lap. Can I do that, please?
She nods very slightly.
Yeah.
Thanks.
As he reaches across, he adjusts her skirt back over her legs.
don't think so.
Okay. I think that's good.
Are you gonna get me out?
Yeah. I'm gonna get you out. Okay? Look at me. Look at me. I'm gonna get you out.
He struggles to release the catch of the seatbelt.
Oh, fuck. Sorry.
That's okay.
He pulls on the seatbelt.
I'm gonna have to cut your belt, okay? I'm gonna have to cut the belt. It's okay. We're gonna get you out. Everything's gonna be fine. Look at me. Everything's gonna be fine. We're gonna get you out of here. Everything's gonna be fine.
With Mrs. Thayer suspended just inches away from him, he cuts her belt with his knife. Petrol is still dripping on the ground at the back of the car, and Gomez brings an extinguisher to the engine fire in the car behind. Suddenly, the flames envelop the bottom of this vehicle. The cop rushes towards Mrs. Thayer's car. As Ryan struggles to release the woman, flames engulf her car too. The Hispanic cop pulls at Ryan's legs. Ryan loses a grip on Mrs. Thayer and gets pulled out. Mrs. Thayer is screaming and waving her arms hysterically. Ryan clambers back into the smoky vehicle and grabs the top of Mrs. Thayer's arms. They pull her out on her belly. The fire service have arrived on the scene. Mrs. Thayer is led away. Her car suddenly explodes in a huge fireball. She has her arm around Ryan's shoulder and a look of bewilderment on her face. As a blanket is put around her shoulders, Ryan lowers her down and hugs her.
It's okay.
Here we go. It's okay. I got it.
What's up, man?
You walk with me? It's cool. It's okay.
Here we go. All right, you're doing great.
Crouching on the ground, Ryan watches open-mouthed as Mrs. Thayer is led away. She looks round at the policeman, and fighting tears, she shakes her head. Ryan stares at her thoughtfully and takes a couple of big breaths. Then Karen leads Graham into an austere wood-paneled conference room dominated by a large mahogany table.
DA wanted me to apologize. He really wanted to be here himself.
No, he didn't. If he did his own dirty work, none of us would have jobs. Jake Flanagan, I work with Rick.
Graham Waters.
Thanks for coming in, Detective.
He just pulled into the garage.
Great. Press conference is in 10 minutes, so we'll make this short. Internal Affairs says this Conklin has two suspicious shootings on his record. Both black men, both times he was cleared, but only just. Detective Lewis makes black man number three. You know any reason why we shouldn't hang Conklin for this?
Well, it's more complicated than we originally thought. We found $300,000 in the trunk of the car that Detective Lewis was driving.
Shit! Go down to the garage, tell him to stay in the car until he hears from me.
He found the money in the Mercedes. I thought that wasn't his car.
Well, the car's actually registered to a Cindy Bradley. We haven't been able to get in touch with her yet. Apparently she left town this morning.
So it wasn't Lewis's car. He may not have even known the money was in it.
Detective Waters chuckles at Karen and the wiry Flanagan. His expression changes to confusion.
You really think you're going to be able to make that fly?
Flanagan smiles at Waters.
Give us a minute.
No problem.
Karen leaves the room. Flanagan looks at the floor.
Who knows about the money?
You gotta be kidding me.
There are only two people in this room.
Myself, my partner, Ferguson, and Internal Affairs.
Jim Ferguson?
Yeah.
Flanagan, hands in pockets, turns and takes a few paces away from Waters.
Okay. I guess I don't see a problem. As it wasn't Lewis's car, the money isn't clear evidence of any wrongdoing, and even if it was, we aren't going to prosecute a dead man, which means the money Internal Affairs is holding can't even be considered evidence.
Well, you know, you can do this whole dance if you want to, but I'm willing to bet when the coroner's report comes back tomorrow, it's going to say that Detective Lewis was coked out of his head.
Fucking black people, huh?
What did you just say?
I mean, I know all the sociological reasons why. Per capita, 8 times more black men are incarcerated than white men. Schools are a disgrace, lack of opportunity, bias in the judicial system, all that stuff. All that stuff. But still, it's got to get to you. On a gut level, as a black man, they just can't keep their hands out of the cookie jar.
Waters stares at Flanagan, who sits.
Of course, you and I know that's not the truth, but that's the way it always plays, doesn't it? And assholes like Lewis just keep feeding the flames. It's got to get to you.
What did you say you did for the DA again?
You coach ball down in Compton, am I right?
Oh, please, don't do that. Don't act like you know something about me, okay?
What do you think those kids need to make them believe, to give them hope? You think they need another drug-dealing cop, or do you think they need a fallen black hero?
Why don't you cut through the bullshit, Flanagan, and just tell me what it is you want?
Waters sits too.
The DA squad loses its lead investigator next month. Rick is quite adamant that his replacement be a person of color. It's a high-profile position, and he wants to send the right message to the community.
And the right message is, look at this black boy I just bought? Well, fuck you very much, but thanks for thinking of me.
Waters gets up and starts to leave.
Actually, we were thinking of you.
He drops a file on the table.
So we saw that. It's your brother's file. 20-something years old and already 3 felonies. 3 strikes law. Kid's going away for life for stealing a car. Christ, that's a shitty law. There's a warrant in there. But still, hey, he had every opportunity you had.
Waters opens the file and sits.
Fucking black people, huh?
Waters looks at Flanagan, then down at the file.
So all I need to do to make this disappear is to frame a potentially innocent man.
What are you, the fucking defender of all things white? We're talking about a white man who shot 3 black men. And you're arguing with me that maybe we're not being fair to him? You know what? Maybe you're right. Maybe you're right. Maybe Lewis did provoke this, and maybe he got exactly what was coming to him. Or maybe, stoned or not, just being a black man in the valley was enough to get him killed. There was no one there to see who shot first, so there was no way to know, which means we could get this wrong. Maybe that's what happened with your brother. Maybe we got it wrong. Maybe Lewis isn't the only one who deserves the benefit of the doubt. You're the one closest to all this. You need to tell us.
Waters rubs his face thoughtfully.
What does your gut tell you?
He stares at Flanagan while he thinks. Then he's standing in front of Karen in a corridor. Richard Cabot, the DA, in a dark suit and tie, strolls over to them.
So, Graham, what do I tell him? You tell me. I'll tell them.
The DA stares down soberly at Waters, who has an expression of uncertainty.
Well, I think given Detective Conklin's history, it's pretty clear what happened last night.
Okay.
Cabot looks at his assistant and moves away. She follows him slowly. Waters is left in the imposing corridor with its shiny marble walls. He's lost in thought. He turns and watches the DA, followed by Karen, striding along a white corridor.
Before I get to why we're here, I know that many of you have heard that we had our car stolen last night. And as you could imagine, my wife and I are both pretty shaken up, but we're okay. And Gene and I truly appreciate all your calls and your concern. Thank you. Now, just after 9 p.m. last night, Detective William Lewis, an 8-year veteran of the force and an active member of the black community, was gunned down by a fellow officer.
A modest L.A. suburb, late afternoon, a small old car pulls up to the pavement. The Persian shopkeeper is at the wheel with an open telephone directory on the dashboard. The man looks round at the single-story houses on the other side of the road. A group of young children are walking along the pavement. A woman comes out of one of the houses. She greets one of the children, a dark-haired girl, and they return to the house. The man picks up his little handgun and looks out of his window again. A black 4x4 stops at a junction nearby. Cameron Thayer is behind the wheel, staring thoughtfully out of the window. He fiddles with the wedding ring on his finger. The two young carjackers approach his car from behind, carrying guns.
Get out the car!
Give me the keys! Get out the...
What the fuck?
Cameron lays into Anthony.
The fuck are you doing, man?
What? Shit. You wanna get killed, nigga?
Say that again.
Say it again, bitch.
You stupid motherfucker.
Say it again, huh?
Christ, yo.
Call me a nigga again.
Yo, man, what the fuck? Get off of him. Fuck you.
Shoot him.
Fuck, blow your head off.
Get off my shit.
Shoot this motherfucker, man.
Man, I swear to God, I'm gonna blow your head off.
Stop talking and shoot.
Come on, Scott, let's go. Shit, hit the fuck off.
Shit. Hey, get off of me.
Fuck off.
Hey, where you going, man? Hell no.
Anthony.
Anthony and Cameron struggle inside the car.
Fuck out of my car.
Oh, shit. Damn.
What you doing, man? Get out of the car.
Fuck you.
Fucking idiot, I said get the fuck out of the
car. You get the fuck out of the car.
25 in pursuit of a black Navigator westbound on Manchito.
That will blow you away. Get the fuck out of the car.
Another patrol car joins the pursuit.
Two, Ida, Tom, Adam, three. Oh, Christ.
Tommy is following the vehicle. Anthony has his gun pointed at Cameron's head.
Get the fuck out of the car!
You get the fuck out of the car!
Get out of the fucking car!
It's my fucking car!
It's my fucking gun!
Fuck, it's my gun now!
Give me my fucking gun!
The 4x4 speeds round a corner past more bungalows. There is an inflatable Santa in the driveway of one.
Fuck!
Cameron stops the car in the drive.
Heads in plain sight, step out of the vehicle!
Tommy and the two other cops all have their guns trained on the car.
Hands in plain sight, step out of the vehicle!
Anthony is slumped down in his seat.
Slowly step out of the vehicle!
Get out of my car. You so brave, you get out the car, man.
Cameron's lip quivers.
Turn off the engine! Throw the keys out the window!
Cameron tucks the little gun round the back of his trouser belt. He looks in the wing mirror at Tommy, who still has his gun pointed at the car. He nods, with tears in his eyes.
Fucking want me? Here I am, you pig fuck!
Lie face down on the ground, spread
no,
your arms and legs.
No, you lie face down on the ground and spread your arms and legs.
Don't come any closer, down on your knees.
Fuck you, man, what are you gonna do? Pull the fucking trigger then.
On your knees now.
You get on your knees and suck my motherfucking dick while you down there.
Do I look like I'm fucking joking with you?
Yeah, that's what you look like, a fucking joke to me.
This man is making threatening gestures.
Oh, threatening gestures? You wanna see a threatening gesture? I got a threatening gesture for you.
I know this man. I know this man.
Get back.
Fuck off. Give me some space. I know this guy.
Get out of the
you
way.
You don't fucking know me.
Step
Who
away.
The fuck are you? Give me some goddamn room. I know this guy.
Man, don't walk up on me.
You see what's happening here? Do you want to die here? Huh? Is that what you want? Because these guys really want to shoot you. And the way you're acting, they'll be completely fucking justified.
Fuck you.
Fuck
Step
me.
Step away from
fuck
me.
Fuck me. I'm not the one who's fucked here. You're the one who's fucked here because you're the one whose head's going to be blown off and onto that man's patio.
Officer Hanson, step away!
He's now. A friend of mine, okay? He's a fucking friend of mine. This man is not armed. He's not gonna shoot you or me or anybody else, all right? So give me two goddamn seconds. You do that? Lower your firearm! Lower your firearm!
The policeman does so. Tommy returns to Cameron, whose eyes are full of bitterness and confusion.
You starting to understand the situation?
What do you want from me?
Unless you think your wife. It's gonna be better off with a husband who has a bloody stump for a head. I want you to sit down on that curb, put your hands on your head, and do nothing until I speak with these officers.
I'm not sitting on no curb. I'm not putting my hands on my head for nobody.
Then stand right where you are and keep your hands in plain sight. Can you do that, huh?
Cameron stares at him and takes a pace away.
Yeah, I can do that.
Good. I told this man to stay where he is and keep his hands in plain sight.
This man better be related to you by blood, because this is fucking nuts.
I need this favor. You can check the guy's name, his license. He's got no priors, no warrants. I need to let him go with a warning.
What kind of fucking warning?
A harsh warning.
The policeman glares at him, shaking his head.
Thank you.
Tommy walks back up to Cameron.
You've been warned. You understand me? Do you understand me?
You want something from me? Because I'm right here.
I'm trying to help you.
I didn't ask for your help, did I?
Go on.
Frowning with tears in his eyes, Cameron backs away.
Yeah, that I can do.
He walks back to the car. Anthony lifts his head off the passenger seat and looks confused. Cameron gets back behind the wheel. Anthony just stares at him, open-mouthed. The TV director reverses the car up and heads out of the driveway. Tommy, standing by his patrol car, watches him go and thinks to himself. He gets back into his car too. He does a U-turn in the road and heads slowly away. In another part of town, the 4x4 pulls up at a crossroads next to a single-story, municipal-looking building. Cameron looks calmly at Anthony, who stares resolutely out of the window. He hands the carjacker his gun. Anthony glances at him with a sulky frown. Anthony makes to leave.
Look at me. You embarrass me. You embarrass yourself.
Still with his sullen expression, Anthony gets out of the car and stands on the pavement. The car moves off. It heads round a corner to rejoin the main road. Anthony starts to walk away too. Meanwhile, elsewhere, a white transit van is coming round a corner. The Persian man watches it from his car. A woman in a white gown waves at the van as it pulls up into a driveway. Inside a house, a dark-haired girl rushes past a decorated Christmas tree to her sitting room window.
Daddy's home!
The shaven-headed young locksmith gets out of his van. The Persian man, with his gun, gets out of his car and walks purposefully towards the van. The locksmith is leaning into the side door of his van. He slides the door shut. The shopkeeper reaches him and points his gun at him.
Sir, give me my money.
What? What money?
Pay for my store. Give me my money.
Honey, stay inside. Elizabeth!
Give me my money.
Aplácate, Stella!
I want my fucking money. Give me the truck.
That's not my truck, bro.
Daddy.
Elizabeth! Hey, you okay? You know what? Hey, I got $50. Here.
$50?
You took everything!
Mommy!
A woman is in the kitchen.
Coming, I'm coming. He doesn't have it.
Hasn't got what?
I have it. He doesn't have it for paper clothes.
She rushes out of the door.
Lara, stand in the street!
The man is pointing the gun at her father. She jumps into her daddy's arms. The locksmith closes his eyes and lets out a huge scream. The shopkeeper stares at his gun. The mother sinks to her knees with an anguished cry. The shopkeeper stands motionless, still holding his gun. He looks confused and overwhelmed. The locksmith grips his little girl. Open-mouthed and bewildered, the locksmith lifts his little girl and pulls her school jumper up one side of her back. Then he repeats this on the other side. There are no gunshot wounds. The Persian man watches open-mouthed too. The locksmith glances at him and carries the girl back towards the house. The shopkeeper has the expression of a broken man. The woman holds the little girl's hand. Weeping, the locksmith pulls his daughter closer to him as he carries her inside. The shopkeeper's arm holding the gun drops. The woman shuts the door. The Persian man stands motionless on the pavement. He's lost in thought. He looks round. He looks down at the gun and hesitantly puts it into his jacket pocket. Still open-mouthed, he turns round and starts to back away. Then, Graham Waters opens the door to his mother's house. His mum's asleep on the sofa. He walks in carrying two bags of groceries. Standing in the kitchen, he takes off his jacket and hangs it on a doorknob. He opens the fridge and takes out a can, a bit of foil, a saucer. He takes eggs, lettuce and other produce from the bag and puts them into the fridge. Meanwhile, Jean, the DA's wife, is in her house, walking up the stairs. She's on the phone.
I sent her out for groceries, and that was 2 hours ago, Carol. Well, you know what? You are one to talk. You go through, like, 6 housekeepers a year. I'm not snapping at you. I am angry. Yes, at them. Yes, at them, the police, at Rick, at Maria, at the dry cleaners who destroyed another blouse today at the gardener who keeps overwatering the lawn. I just thought that, Carol, I just thought that I would wake up today and I would feel better, you know? But I was still mad. And I realized that it had nothing to do with my car being stolen. I wake up like this every morning. I am angry all the time, and I don't know why, Carol. I don't know why, and I... Yeah. Yeah, call me back.
With just socks on her feet, Jean slips off the polished wooden stair. She lies, hunched over at the bottom of the first flight of stairs. Her hand slowly moves to her left leg. It's now nighttime. Car headlights are moving through the darkness. Out on a city street, Peter, Anthony's accomplice, has his thumb out trying to hitch a ride. He walks along the edge of the pavement in a sports jacket and dark knitted hat. He turns, then continues walking. Officer Ryan is driving along in his car. He reaches a stop sign and looks around thoughtfully. The car moves off again. Peter is still trying to hitch a lift along a fairly deserted street. A small saloon car pulls up. The young man dashes up to it. He opens the door and gets in.
Really appreciate this.
No problem.
It's Tommy off duty. The young black man rubs his hands together.
So how long you been out there tonight?
It's cold. Hour maybe.
Big surprise, huh?
Yeah, this ain't exactly pick up a brother territory.
True. So where you headed?
Anywhere the other side of the hill.
Peter nods his head.
Some good music. No, really. I'm starting to understand it. Wrote me a country song myself just yesterday.
I bet you did.
Tommy glances at the young man's scuffed and dirty trainers and the rip in his jacket.
So what was going on in the valley tonight?
Ice skate.
Ice skate.
Love the ice skate. You know, when I was a kid, I always wanted to be a goalie.
Come on.
What? You think that's funny or something?
I think you're having fun.
Yeah, whatever.
Peter stares out of the window. Then he spots a St. Christopher figurine on the dashboard.
Something else funny?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, what's that?
People, man. People.
People like me.
No, I'm not laughing at you, man.
Yeah, I can see that. Why don't you laugh outside?
Yo, why are you getting all bent out of shape?
Not getting bent, man. Just pulling over.
He brings the car to the roadside.
Come on, man, keep driving. I said I'm not laughing at you.
And I'm not telling you to get the fuck out of my car.
Why you being a fucking jerk, man? Just drive the car.
I got a better idea. Get out now.
Fine. You want me to show you? I'll show you.
Get your hands out of your pocket. Put your hands where I can see them.
Who the fuck you think you're talking to?
Put your hands where I can see them.
You want to see what's in my hands? I'll show you what's in my fucking hands.
Tommy reaches for his gun. Peter looks down at his stomach. Tommy stares at him with grave concern. As he watches, The young man breathes his last, and his head slowly flops to one side. He's clutching the same religious figurine as Tommy has on his dashboard. Tommy now looks horrified. He reaches over to the young man.
Oh, God.
Peter has died, staring at Tommy with a quizzical look. Tommy looks round. He opens the car door and pushes Peter out. The body flops onto the road. Tommy looks round again with an expression of anxiety. He gets out of the car. The road is deserted. He slowly walks around the front of the car. He crouches down beside the body. He looks round again. Later, the police cars have arrived at the scene.
Hey, you okay?
Breathing.
Shit. Heard of my snow.
Get out of here.
That's what I heard.
You gotta smoke.
Oh, quit.
Yeah, me too. What you got?
That kid.
Hey, Bob.
As in the first scene, Detective Waters bends down beside the trainer in the grass, prodding it with his pen. He rubs his eye and looks with concern at the body of the young black man lying in the dirt ahead of him, a large crimson bloodstain on his white t-shirt. He looks long and hard at Peter, then looks down and closes his eyes. Elsewhere, a night bus comes round a corner. There are a few people in it. Anthony is inside, his head leaning against the window. He lifts his head and looks round at the mix of people on the bus. A group of Hispanic women. A Mexican-looking man with a large moustache who looks at him. Anthony resumes his sleepy position. But he notices something out of the window. His head turns as he looks at it. He pulls at the cord. The keys are still in the lock of the white transit van. Anthony opens up the door and gets in. The van pulls away. Then an Oriental woman in a pink jacket bursts into a hospital corridor. She barges into a room.
Tingo!
Ma'am!
Oh, Kim Lee.
The man has a badly cut and bruised face and is covered in bandages. The woman tries to touch his face.
I thought you were dead. I called every hospital.
It's okay. I'm okay. Thank you for finding me.
She looks down at him with concern.
Will you do something for me?
Anything.
Go to the locker.
The woman turns and moves to a series of tall brown lockers.
The next one.
She opens the locker door and pulls out a plastic bag.
My wallet? There's a check. Bring it here.
The woman brings over a wallet and unfolds a little check. Cash it right away, the man says. Then, in the lockup garage...
I get it. When I said get me a black Lincoln Navigator, he thought I said get me a white piece of shit Benelair.
Fine. Fine, just give me whatever for it.
Lucian, you should see this.
Anthony and the garage owner walk round to the back of the van. A large black mechanic opens up the other rear door, and they stare through a grate into the back of the vehicle with looks of surprise. Huddled together within its shadows are a group of Oriental people, men, women, and children.
I'll take the van.
They're chained to the van.
So I'll take them too.
You want to buy these Chinamen?
Don't be ignorant. They're Thai or Cambodian, entirely different kind of chinks.
What the hell are you gonna do with them?
Sell them, what the hell you think? I'll give you 500 apiece and you can keep the van.
The gruff man takes a drag on his cigarette. Then Rhea is standing in the white corridor of the morgue. She's stroking her neck thoughtfully. She looks round. Waters consoles his mother, who's looking through a window into another room. She's collapsed on the ground. As Waters grips her, a dark-haired woman in a white lab coat passes them. It's the shopkeeper's daughter. Rhea bites her lip. The Persian woman lifts a phone receiver.
Story.
Waters and Rhea help his mother into a chair. Waters sits next to her. The woman closes her eyes and shakes her head.
Did this, Mom?
Oh, I already know. You did. I asked you to find your brother, but you were busy. We weren't much good to you anymore, were we? You got things to do. You go ahead. I'll sign the papers.
Mom, I want to stay with...
I just want to wait with my baby.
Waters stares at her somberly. He nods slightly, then gets up and walks off.
He came home. Did you know that? My little boy. When I was sleeping, he brought me groceries. It's the last thing he did.
Waters opens his mouth as if to say something, but he just nods his head thoughtfully, turns and walks away. Rhea looks at him sympathetically, but Waters strides past her. He's lost in thought, struggling to hold back the tears. Then the Persian daughter enters her father's shop. It's dark.
Baba. Babajan.
The store has been tidied up. The woman walks to the back of the shop. Her father is slumped on the ground, resting the gun on his knee.
Baba, what happened?
She crouches down next to the man.
What did you do? Baba, what did you do?
I shot a little girl.
What?
No, she's okay. She's here. And the gun shoot her. But she's okay, Tori. Nothing happened. She's my Fereshte.
What are you talking about, Daddy?
My Fereshte, Tori. My angel. My angel. She came to protect me. To protect us.
Dori has tears in her eyes.
You understand? Take this, please. Take it.
She looks down. He hands her the gun.
Hey. Everything is okay, Dori.
She nods.
How would you do this, Michelle?
Okay, Daddy.
Okay.
She gets up and walks to the front of the shop. Her father watches with a contented smile. The woman puts the gun in her handbag. She pulls out the drawer under the counter, and glancing over at her dad, she pulls out a box of bullets marked blanks. Then the DA is in a marble lobby.
Jean?
Rick?
Yeah? What's wrong?
I fell down the stairs.
Are you all right?
I tried calling you. I couldn't get through to anyone. Not Kath, not Marge, not Julie, not...
I'm getting in the elevator. I'll be in my car. I'll be home in 20 minutes.
It's okay. Maria drove me to emergency. It's just a bad sprain. Carol was the only one that was home, and she said she couldn't come get me because she was getting a massage.
Well, that's because she's a bitch.
She's been my friend for 10 years.
All right, honey, feel better.
I'll be there soon.
His wife is lying in bed.
I love you.
I love you too.
The DA puts his mobile phone in his pocket and looks at Karen. Jean holds the receiver to her ear while thinking, then puts it down. Rick nods at Karen and walks away. A large Christmas tree dominates the shiny lobby. Meanwhile, Maria puts a cup down by Jean's bed.
Miss Jean, would you like to sit up?
Jean nods her head. The maid helps her to a seated position and adjusts a pillow behind her.
Good.
Okay. But Jean clings to the maid and hugs her tightly.
Do you want to hear something funny?
What, Mrs. Jean?
You're the best friend I've got. Hold
your hand. All the answers
to they remain in the embrace. Meanwhile, Tommy stands by his burning car on a piece of waste ground. He throws a petrol canister high into the air. He walks slowly away from the flames. He pulls a couple of latex gloves off his hands. He stares at the ground gloomily. John Ryan, in his pajamas, stands over his father, who is on the toilet in the bathroom. The old man shakes his head. John puts his hand on his dad's shoulder. As the man starts to cry, John bends down and kisses the back of his head. Rick, now at home, locks the back door that the locksmith had been working on and looks out of the window into the night. The locksmith is in his daughter's bedroom, staring out of her window. The little girl is asleep on her bed, cuddled up to her mother, who is asleep next to her. The shaven-headed locksmith rests his face on his folded arms, leaning against the window ledge and thinking. Cameron is driving in his car, thinking too. He peers up out of the window and stops the car in a deserted area next to a chicken wire fence. He gets out of the car and looks up in bewilderment. Snow is falling lightly in Los Angeles. He looks around as if he's never seen it before and brushes a flake off his shoulder. A group of kids are now gathered around the bonfire that is Tommy's burning car. Cameron approaches them, looking up again as the snow becomes a little heavier. He shields his eyes against the flames. One of the kids is dancing in front of the fire. He watches as they throw debris into it. He picks up some wood and hurls it into the blaze. He flips open his mobile phone. Its screen reads, "Home calling." He lifts the phone to his ear.
Hi.
Mrs. Thayer is sitting on the edge of her bed in a dressing gown.
I love you.
With tears rolling down her cheeks, Mrs. Thayer smiles. Meanwhile, Detective Waters is back at the roadside murder scene. He stares out across the grassy scrubland to the line of city lights on the horizon. He looks around thoughtfully, then seems to notice something on the ground. He takes a few steps, then kicks at something shiny sticking out of the dirt. Crouches down and picks up his brother's little St. Christopher statuette. He holds it tightly and rests his chin on his hands as he stares down at the ground. Back in the city, a street in Chinatown. The street is dominated by shop fronts with Chinese signs above them. Many people are still walking along the pavements. The battered transit van pulls up. Anthony gets out and opens up the back doors.
All right. Everybody out, man. Free to go. All right, come on. Come on, now this is America. Time is money. Chop, chop. Come on, y'all.
The Oriental women and children start to slowly disembark. The dirty-faced stowaways look around at their new surroundings. One man crouches down by a wall. A younger Oriental man is staring through a shop window at the shelves and shelves of CDs inside.
That's $40. Buy everybody chop suey, you understand?
Don't be fucking Chinaman.
Anthony starts to close the van's back doors. He gets up into the cabin and sits behind the wheel. His sullen expression changes to a warm smile. He glances behind him and the van heads off. On the other side of the road, a car slams into the back of another. Shaniqua Johnson, the medical insurance official, gets out of her car and looks at her bumper. Of people are now standing arguing around the two cars at a crossroads as life continues around them and the snow continues to fall gently down.
Pennies a day. Big bank, take little bank anyways. Why the country's always going to war for many days. Got Bush playing family, do with the town. Survey set, oops, you out of town. We the only ones allowed to have nuclear bombs. Guaranteed.
mean it won't be another Vietnam. 911 ain't a joke no more. Nowadays it's a whole different approach to war. Been hot and out of Pakistan. And you wanna be heard, better clap your hands. Come on. These problems ain't yours and mine. We all pay for the crime. It's time we learn to be back. Providing no turning back. No more excuses and lies. It's only two will survive. The time we borrow we do. All of tomorrow we do. Nah, too fast, these bastards imitate. Newsflash, the gas has been a fake. Until I won't promote black. Then it take MJ's mojo and pass the Timberlake. That's why Mike Hunger's little boy out to dry. No clothesline like he's about to fly. No torches, kids falling out the sky. Why the boss in the sandbox shout and cry. Outside with the cops and the paparazzi. Couldn't walk a mile in Mike's Arachi. Spain's a disease and we all affected. Think that it's not, but it's all connected. Can't understand why these folks are greedy. So I'm making a band, still bought the CD. Why they play Timberlake on BET, but won't play PE on MTV. Got radio damn near a shambles. Monopoly ain't no game, clear channel. So I write words and I rap for fans. If you wanna be heard, better clap your hands. Come on. These problems are yours and mine. We all pay for the crime. It's time we learn to react. No hiding, no turning back. No more excuses or lies. Since only truth will survive. The time we borrow is due. All of tomorrow is you.